Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Claire Woodcock.
Today we have news about Carbondale's approval of a contract to acquire land at the base of a popular hiking area. Also, we'll check in on what avalanche conditions are like in this low snow year with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center.
Also, there's a team of chaplains at Valley View Hospital ready to talk to patients about anything from tractors to their diagnosis. And flu cases are up in Pitkin, Eagle, and Garfield counties. Kristen, do we have any hand sanitizer in here?
I'm hoarding it. The only thing we're spreading is local news, I promise. The biggest stories from this week coming up on Mountain Edition. The city of Aspen and Pitkin County are working together on a proposed trail along Castle Creek Road between the Marolt Trail and the Aspen Country Day School. Today, the open space boards of both governments met to choose a preferred alignment. Officials say a trail is needed to improve safety along Castle Creek Road, especially for students at the Aspen Music School and Aspen Country Day School, which share facilities. There were 8 proposed options, with cost estimates ranging from $1 to $5 million. Public comment showed a slight preference for a trail on the east side of the road, but concern over the $4 million price tag. Staff is recommending that the open space boards move forward with that alternative, while also taking some cost-cutting measures. Officials will also propose lowering the speed limit along Castle Creek Road.
The town of Carbondale approved a contract last week to acquire land at the base of Red Hill from the Aspen Valley Land Trust. AVLT purchased the property in January and has been raising money to build new trails and improve safety. The idea is to move the trailhead closer to the parking area. AVLT still needs to raise about $300,000 of the total $1.35 million price tag. That covers the cost of the land, trail design and construction, and an endowment for the town of Carbondale to maintain the property. Executive Director Suzanne Stevens says if enough donations come in by mid-February, the trail construction could start this fall. The land will transfer from AVLT to the town of Carbondale when all of the funding is in place.
A new study finds that dust falling on mountain snow is speeding up spring snowmelt, even more than warming temperatures.
From KUNC, Luke Runyon has more.
The problem is all about light and dark colors. Dust causes the surface of snowpack to be darker and more likely to absorb heat, like wearing a black t-shirt on a hot summer day. NASA scientists monitored spring runoff in the rivers of southwestern Colorado and found the more dust there is, the faster runoff occurs. That's a concern for water managers who generally prefer a slower paced runoff to make it easier to store the water in reservoirs and prevent flooding. So where's all this dust coming from? Well, a lot is originating in the desert southwest, where persistent drought and human activities like residential development and recreation are kicking up dust into storm clouds that move into the Rocky Mountains. I'm Luke Runyon.
Sexual harassment complaints still loom at Colorado's capital. Most were filed last November when it was quiet at the statehouse. The building is now full of lawmakers, lobbyists, aides, and staffers for the annual legislative session.
But as Benta Berkland reports, the issue hasn't gone away.
To a casual observer, the Capitol is full of activity and back to the way it always is. The halls are bustling and committees are debating bills.
I would say it's anything but business as usual.
That's Republican Senator Jim Smallwood of Parker. He's alluding to sexual harassment complaints. Complaints have been made against Democratic Representative Steve Lebsack and Republican Senators Randy Baumgartner and Jack Tate. It's changed the way Smallwood does his job. For starters, he says he no longer meets with women or men alone in his office.
These are common sense approaches that people in private business have been doing for years or decades. Open door meetings instead of closed door meetings, glass conference rooms instead of closed conference rooms. These are things that show no gender discrimination whatsoever, but it's smart having other people in the room.
Republican Senator Chris Hulbert, also of Parker, says he's more sensitive to how he conducts meetings.
Asking to have a door closed, are you comfortable with that, having my assistant right outside the door and making sure that the way we conduct business is okay, not assuming because I am in a position of power that the way I've done it before is the right way.
But the workplace extends beyond the Capitol to events, dinners, and other functions. Right now, leaders are working to change internal policies and conducting sexual harassment trainings, even though the formal complaints are unresolved.
It has been 2 months, And we need to hear what is happening with these investigations. And I think that's actually a major problem with the workplace harassment policy, is that the public doesn't necessarily get to know.
Erin Hottenstein is with the group Colorado 50-50, which worked to get more women to run for office. The complaint process is confidential, and leaders in the House and Senate determine what punishments are appropriate. She's also unhappy that the Republicans under investigation chair committees and are the key players on the highest priority GOP bills.
To be in a position of leadership, that's an honor, and so you should be at least temporarily removed from that while the investigation is underway.
The process hasn't been completed.
Senator Holbert is also the majority leader. He says complaints are being taken seriously, and his party will honor due process.
If someone wants to draw a conclusion from that, I think that that's premature.
Colorado State University political science professor John Strayer says sexual harassment is the kind of issue where almost everyone loses, adding that most people realize it's wrong under any circumstance.
At the same time, we have a tradition in this country of fair process, the need for evidence, the need for testimony, the need not to jump to conclusions, civil procedure, anything. Those things are sort of at loggerheads in a situation like this.
Some lawmakers are not working on bills with the accused. Others are. Speaker of the House Chrisanta Duran has an affordable housing bill pending with Jack Tate. And Republican Senator Vicky Marble is the only lawmaker in the legislature sponsoring a bill with Steve Lebsack. Meanwhile, Democrats such as Representative Jeff Bridges from Greenwood Village support a resolution to expel Lebsack from the legislature. It hasn't been introduced yet.
Things may appear calm on the surface, and that's because as legislators we have a responsibility to the people of Colorado to do the people's business, but just below the surface things are boiling. There is tension, there is apprehension, there is real palpable fear, and we are waiting for a resolution to this that we hope will come very soon.
Expelling a lawmaker takes a two-thirds vote in the House. It's only happened once in state history in 1915. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Claire Woodcock.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And whether you're a longtime resident here in the Roaring Fork Valley or a fresh face, an employer or an employee, you know that housing is an issue that affects all of us.
Aspen Public Radio invites you to our second town hall on housing issues in the Roaring Fork Valley. We'll host a panel discussion about what cities and towns can do to help with the housing crunch.
Join us at the Belly Up on February 7th from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Doors open at 5:30, and we'll save some time for audience conversation following the panel discussion.
And we want your voice to be part of this conversation. Are you an employer who's struggling to find qualified workers because of housing? Do you have friends or family who have had to move away because of what it costs to live here?
To share your perspective, send an email to news@aspenpublicradio.org with the subject line Town Hall, or find out more at our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
We look forward to seeing you there. The Carbondale Public Arts Commission is seeking 15 new outdoor street sculptures for the annual Art Around Town program. This next wave of sculptures would replace landmarks like Humpty Dumpty, which a group of locals is still trying to purchase. The sculptures will be located throughout the downtown area, including on Main Street, near the library, and along the Rio Grande Trail. The Arts Commission promotes local artists and art awareness in the community. The deadline for entries is this Sunday. Selections will be made by March 6th. And the sculptures will be unveiled May 31st with an artist reception to follow.
Garfield County will see $7 million more in property taxes this year compared to last. As Wyatt Orm reports, most of this will go to a hospital.
In last year's election, voters in the Grand River Hospital District, which includes Rifle and Parachute, decided to expand the hospital by taxing themselves. Voters in the Carbondale and Rural Fire Protection District continued their existing property tax. Garfield County itself is expected to get about the same as it did last year and will distribute it similarly, too. Almost half of the property taxes the county receives will go to schools, a quarter to county operations, and the remainder to fire districts, Colorado Mountain College, and towns. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
This year's snowpack in the Aspen area is about two-thirds of average, and while skiers are hoping for more snow, those headed into the backcountry rely on the Colorado Avalanche Information Center for valuable data about avalanche conditions. Current conditions are rated moderate, which is second on a 5-point ranking system.
Elizabeth Stewart Severy asked Brian Lazar, deputy director of the CAIC, about how that moderate rating can actually be misleading.
Because moderate avalanche danger is not accompanied by obvious signs of instability, like ongoing avalanche activity, or when you hear collapsing or whooping or shooting cracks in the snowpack, it can lull people into believing that conditions are safe. And moderate avalanche danger does not mean safe avalanche conditions. It means that you can trigger avalanches on specific slopes and in certain terrain configurations that have the right snowpack structure. Just because it's level 2 out of 5 does not mean it's generally safe everywhere you go in the backcountry.
Okay. Right now, the likelihood of triggering a slide is diminishing, but that certainly still is possible. Where should backcountry travelers be particularly aware?
Where we've seen most avalanche activity is throughout the Central Mountains, and the Aspen Zone included. It was on north and east-facing aspects at all elevations, and the most suspect slopes are those that are steeper than 35 degrees. And on those slopes, we still have a slab that's sitting on weak snow from earlier in the season, as well as weak snow that developed during our dry periods between storms. And so the bullseye for avalanche activity is on those north and east aspects, steeper than 35 degrees, where you still have a slab stiff enough to support a person's weight.
How different is this year from the past couple years in terms of kind of the midwinter snowpack?
Well, I mean, the most distinguishing feature is it can't escape anyone who lives in this valley is just the lack of snowfall. We got really early season snow, which is never a great thing, but it stuck around for a long time and turned into a really pronounced weak layer. We've seen many avalanches breaking on snow that fell in October and early November. And so when we're talking about avalanches, you know, at the end of January breaking to the ground, that setup all started to take place in October and early November. And that weak layer that was formed then is still a weak layer that we're worried about.
That's Brian Lazar, Deputy Director of the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. The full conversation with Elizabeth is available online at aspenpublicradio.org.
Thomas Strut is a German artist who began as a painter and musician before transitioning into photography. His series on Israel and Palestine is currently on display in full for the first time at the Aspen Art Museum. And Claire, you talked to him about this exhibit.
So I want to ask you about some of the cityscapes that have been instrumental in your career. When did you have a moment when you were like, yes, this is a good idea. Yes, I know what I'm doing.
I think the attraction to architecture came, most likely in retrospect from you being post-war German, where I grew up in Düsseldorf and Cologne, in two cities that had been heavily destroyed. So I grew up in a kind of strange patchwork of building gaps, 50s buildings that were very modest and kind of rather sad and poor, with your pre-war buildings that had partly new facades because the ornamentation had been destroyed during the war. So I grew up in a strange architectural environment, which educated me in a certain way, looking at architecture as an expression of truth, because architecture tells something about the thoughts of people, the very strong historical reference that is sort of has this, like when you live in a city, you're like the effect of the city, what the buildings tell you and how they influence you and what they tell you about the mentality and the strategies and the intentions and the unconscious, your joy or tension of its inhabitants is in effect for a much longer time than any other shorter events. And I think that made me curious, and especially when I started to travel beyond that is also kind of unconscious expression of the community in a way, you know, about pride, about joy, about stupidity, egocentricity and everything else, which is human nature. So that was something that I found very fascinating. So I started with that, and then it evolved into a decade-long practice of photographing streets in maybe, I don't know, 70 or 80 cities.
How have you seen the composition of your photographs change over time?
I had an advantage to having been a painter from the beginning, so I knew a lot about composition from looking at paintings. The installation of an exhibition, or the installation of this exhibition in particular here, I worked on the lineup or the order, sort of the composition, which photograph is where in the room and on which wall for several hours, which is a little bit also like a piece of music. It's like a symphony. Like, what's the first tone you set, or the first narrative upon entering the room, and how does it develop in a way, and how do the different narratives you connect with each other to make sure that the strongest highlights from the series of 18 pictures is in just one corner, and then then there's another corner in a space that gets less interesting, or there's maybe combinations of photographs that disturb each other. You know, because if you have five pictures, they don't all work well together in the same manner. So when you have five pictures and you say A, B, C, D, E, or you say E, you're A, B, C, D, or so, it changes a lot what that group of pictures would have to say together.
So Claire, have you seen those photos?
Yeah, and first of all, they're huge. And every little detail, from the scenery to the family portraits, have their own story to tell. You just have to look close enough. This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Claire Woodcock.
And I'm Kristen Kay. In other Aspen Public Radio news, Mayor Steve Skadron and other Aspen officials are partnering with the governor's office to host a symposium on climate preparedness and clean energy this week.
Prominent Aspenite Carl Bergman, who founded Carl's Pharmacy, passed away over the weekend.
The Republican-controlled state Senate has passed a bill that allows special districts to once again collect retail pot taxes.
And six local skiers from three disciplines will represent the United States at the 2018 Olympics in South Korea.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. The group Battlement Concerned Citizens is opposing a proposal for a new well pad and wastewater injection well in their community. Colorado regulations require that oil and gas development is a minimum of 500 feet away from homes and buildings. This proposal has wells within 500 feet of several homes. URSA Resources has asked the state for a variance. Earlier this week, Dave Devaney, who is chair of Battlement Concerned Citizens, testified in front of the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. He asked the commission to deny the request for exemption from the setback rule. The Colorado Department of Public Health and the Environment has said it also does not support the proposal. The state is expected to make a decision this spring.
Pitkin County says the flu is on the rise. A sample of doctors and nurses reported 5.4% of their patients have had flu-like symptoms, which is higher than this time last year. So far this flu season, Garfield County has had 22 hospitalizations because of the flu, the majority in the past 3 weeks. This is a sharp increase. However, it's unclear whether this year will be worse than last year in Garfield County, when there were 36 hospitalizations total.
Governor Hickenlooper has released his plan to encourage more Coloradans to drive electric.
Elizabeth Stewart Savory reports.
The plan includes more fast charging stations on Colorado's highways and steps to encourage more people to make the move to electric vehicles. It's part of Hickenlooper's commitment to the U.S. Climate Alliance and plan to support clean energy in Colorado. Electric vehicle use is growing in Colorado, but infrastructure hasn't kept up pace. There are now 53 charging stations in the state. Studies show that as many as 630 could be needed. The governor plans to both seek grants to fund such improvements and to look for ways to increase public funding. Several state departments will also work on initiatives to expand access to electric vehicles. The plan will be updated on a yearly basis. Elizabeth Stewart Severy, Aspen Public Radio Environment Desk.
Late last week, Aspen City Council gave the go-ahead on two private leases on public land at Cozy Point Ranch. Aspen Tree, a local agriculture and education operation, will lease 14 acres, and Cozy Point Equestrian Facility will continue to operate on 27 acres.
Elizabeth Stewart Severy talked with Wyatt Orme about the details.
So what's the plan for these new leases?
Well, the equestrian operation will be much the same. They board horses and have other equestrian programming, including the high school equestrian team. But there will be growth and change on the agriculture side. Aspen Tree operates now at Cozy Point Ranch on just a half an acre. And Ed Invardi, who heads up Aspen Tree, calls it a farm park. So they have farm animals, education programs, they sell eggs and other products at local farmers markets, and they host a really popular community dinner around Thanksgiving.
Okay.
So all of that's going to continue, but it will grow. The new lease is for 14 acres, and Vardy has big plans for sustainable agriculture and education. He plans to expand the food production, and perhaps the biggest change is that they want to build a $5 million facility called the Farm Center. That's going to include a classroom, a community commercial kitchen for kind of local food startups, and also a store for local foods. So Aspen Tree is in the process of raising money right now for that facility, and as Vardy pointed out to council, all of this is a significant investment for them in the property.
So Aspen Tree will add all this infrastructure, but it's public property. So what are the terms of the lease?
It's essentially a 20-year lease. And this may sound like a long time, but Vardy was actually asking council for more guarantees that he'll be able to operate long term. He says it takes at least 15 years to see a return on the investments that he put in, not just that $5 million farm center, but also it takes time to regenerate the soil for things like fruit trees to become established and for a healthy ecosystem.
Huh.
So Vardy asked council to actually revisit the lease and give some other options, and they weren't supportive of extending the lease beyond the kind of 20-year period.
Okay, so what was the mood like at the council meeting?
Vardy has tons of support from the community. The council chambers were packed with parents and kids who use and love Aspen Tree now and want to see it grow. And council showed support as well, though Mayor Steve Scadron did raise a philosophical question asking if these type of leases represent the commercialization of public lands. And this is not the only open space property in the valley that's being used for agricultural purposes. Pitkin County has several open space properties with agricultural leases as well. So this question of what we do with our open spaces is something the community will certainly have to continue to wrestle with. For now, council advised staff to move forward with these leases, and it will be back in front of council in February.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth.
You bet.
Our understanding of what it means to heal is evolving. Hospitals still treat their patients' bodies, but now they're paying attention to mental and emotional health as well.
At Valley View Hospital in Glenwood Springs, there's a team of chaplains who are ready at a moment's notice to tend to any patient's spiritual needs.
Lauren Martin's business card says he's Valley View's spiritual care coordinator.
Dash chaplain.
He and his three colleagues are basically professional empathizers.
We sit with another person in the midst of their fears.
When he gets to work every morning, Martin does rounds.
Which means go from patient to patient, introducing myself. Very quickly, I let them know that I'm not there to proselytize.
He'll pray with a patient if they want, but really, he's just there to chat about anything, about feeding birds or John Deere tractors. However, he's not there to do things like
tell a joke, or to distract them, or to say, oh, it's going to be fine, you'll be fine, you're resilient, you're gonna make it through this.
Some of his patients are very sick, like Todd Cecil, who just celebrated his 60th birthday.
I thought I would turn 60. I don't know if I'll turn 65.
He has a rare form of bladder cancer.
Plasmacytoid urethral carcinoma.
And he's been in the hospital a lot. In 2017, for instance,
I had either an appointment, a procedure, a surgery, a hospitalization, lab work, something, at least once a week, every week from the beginning of January till the first week of October.
When you're spending that much time in the hospital, it's nice to have someone like Martin around to talk with. Cecil says he and his wife are very close, but they don't have kids, and he doesn't have many friends, let alone male friends, except for Martin.
He's probably the one male I've talked to more than anybody about any of this.
Which has been helpful to both Cecil and his wife. It makes it so she's not the only other person there for her husband. And that's what spiritual care is all about, shouldering some of the emotional weight. Patty Harris, who pioneered Valley View's spiritual care program, remembers what it's like to be in the emergency room when someone's being resuscitated and their family members are just standing there in shock.
I can hold my hand on their arm or help them stand there and watch. And I can make eye contact with the staff because they're looking at me as though they're looking for support.
When Harris first started her work at the hospital in 1998, many on the staff were skeptical.
I'd walk down the halls and nobody would even make eye contact with me. It's, what's she doing here? They were doubting, you know, do they want to trust me with their patients, which is a very legitimate question, I think.
They'd had problems before with religious people coming to the hospital to proselytize. Eventually, Harris won the trust of her colleagues. The work of spiritual care, she says, speaks for itself. As an example, 25 years ago, two medical schools in the United States offered coursework on spirituality and healthcare.
Today, 100% of them do. It's recognized that this is essential to healing.
Spiritual care is no panacea, of course. Terrible, unfair things still happen to seemingly innocent people. Harris calls these cases the whys.
Why is an innocent child killed or hurt? Why is a young mother of three children developing cancer at age 40.
Still, Harris says spiritual care is more crucial now than ever. With our increased dependence on technology, patients expect to get well quickly. When they don't, they need human connection, someone who will listen. Lauren Martin likens it to a room full of stringed instruments.
If you pluck a C string, all of the other C strings will say, I recognize that, I recognize that frequency, I know what to do with that, and they begin ringing. Somehow the same thing is true within people.
His job is to recognize his patients' frequencies and to ring along with them for as long as they need. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Claire Woodcock. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and from all around the world on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune into Valley Roundup tomorrow at 3:30. Allison Baktesh takes a deep dive into the headlines with local reporters and columnists.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.